Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 276.
276 special episode. We're going to be talking about Terminator Genesis, Woman in Gold, Maggie, 71.
Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl.
Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl, absolutely. And we've got a very special guest. But also, I'm actually really surprised you had a flight delay, that you're actually in the garage right now. You had a flight delay.
Came right from LAX.
Yeah, came right from LAX and made it here the exact same time as the guest, only a couple minutes later.
I was pulling up while he was coming through the gate.
Yes.
And I was like, I almost killed him because I didn't recognize him. Right. I just thought there was a foreigner running on American soil.
Actually, I forgot which house it was, and I technically went into your neighbor's yard first. they also have a drawstring that opens their backyard, and I was like, well, that's handy. They're putting a drawstring. I don't remember that from last time. And then I was like, wow, Chris's pool seems to be bigger than the pool he didn't have last time I came here. And then I was like, oh, wow, there's a good view from this backyard. Oh, of that shed that I'm meant to be in next door. That's it. I'm one away.
What kind of podcasts were they doing?
Yeah. A really successful one. And they're selling twice as much merch for the thrilling adventure. Yeah. That's the weird thing. Yeah, literally hundreds of orders a day.
That's how they can afford that
we
pool.
We always get trumped. Every time.
Like, they're doing Thrilling Adventure Hour went to your neighbor's podcast for the good merch, and then right. It's like, we'll let those film nerd idiots unload.
Weirdly enough, because like, considering we're talking about Terminator today, it's actually just you guys in a different timeline.
Yeah.
But you are just twice as successful as you are, doing exactly the same things, but twice as successful.
God,
but making actual correct
decisions.
How do
we get in that timeline?
Yeah.
It's like, how do we gotta know to get that timeline?
Some kind of butterfly effect, weird thing. We gotta go back in time and kill a butterfly or something.
I tell you what it was. I believe it was the fog at the San Francisco airport this morning that has the fog at SFO has delayed more flights than anything.
Did you find yourself on an aircraft carrier in World War II?
Plus, it was weird. I don't know what happened. Martin Sheen was there. None of it made sense. And then I saw him when he was older, and there was this weird guy in a limo that we never met till the end.
Wow.
That was crazy.
It happens every time at that airport.
It does seem like they would come up with some sort of defogging technology based on the fact that they so often... You know, it's weird, don't you think, that no one's working on that?
No one.
I imagine.
Well,
right?
Well, there's no one in LA working on drains.
Right.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense. Why did they build it there? Like, let's find the foggiest part of the peninsula in this bay, and then let's keep expanding this airport. I know the Oakland airport's better and it's easier, but let's really fucking pump the money into SFO. All right. But I made it. I literally came right from the airport.
That was great. On the 405, you made it too.
Full of horrendous traffic.
Wow.
Took me. I got picked up probably a little bit before 4, so it took me an hour and a half in traffic.
Wow.
On top of 2 flights.
But turns out the machines may not have wanted you to get here.
I know. That's what this is all about. Skynet's going online.
First thing we can do, block Graham from podcasting. Priority one.
Not launch nukes just to stop us. I mean, just delay the podcast.
Actually, now that you think about that, I don't think they would want to stop podcasting, because if you really think about the idea of us being loaded into the machines, the one thing that the machines need, and I saw Ray Kurzweil, you know, he's the guy who's done all the, he works at Google. He's like the head dreamer or whatever at Google, and he's the one who's wrote the book about the singularity, right?
Mm-hmm.
And his whole thing is that humor is the trickiest thing for AI to replicate, and that we'll know truly that we've got, a singularity when, machines have a sense of humor. So surely the thing that you would be working on if you were an artificial, like, where do you have access to all these personalities and all this information about these people and their lives and be able to process it? It's podcasts.
So there's going to be a podcast robot.
All the Terminators of the future will be have the personality of various podcasts.
They'll just be like...
You'll have the Corolla bot and the Kevin Smith bot and, the Marin bot, the right Marinator.
Right before they laser your head off, right. They're just going to be like, hashtag work it. On shot first.
Why is that Terminator whistling?
Now, that's weird. Why is he doing a Bane impression?
Do not forget to donate.
I have a new Kickstarter. No, you don't, Skynet. No, you don't. Well, if you haven't figured it out, folks, that is the voice of Will Anderson.
Hello. G'day.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for Aussieing it up and calling us mate.
Yeah.
So what you've been, we haven't talked to you in a while. What have you been up to? You're kind of going back and forth between you.
Well, yeah. So I mean, yeah. Okay. So I.
What's the other city you live in? Like Los Angeles? We need to put it down for the movie.
Yeah. Sydney.
Sydney. Okay.
So I have a house in Sydney that I spent 2 weeks in the last 2 years. No. Yeah, that's out. That's a really fine investment. A lot of other people, I get a lot of photos from my friends enjoying that house. Oh.
Keep up the work on the road, Will. Love the house.
Is it right if we turn on the gas heater for the pool? Well, it's $75 a day, but I guess you guys are having fun. better get on the road. It's a hilarities in Cleveland to pay that mortgage for you guys.
Better move some Will Illuminati CDs or whatever to pay for that.
Essentially, the plot of my life is the plot from Weekend at Bernie's, except instead of me being dead, Bernie's on the road in the States. Right. So I did 20 US cities last year, and Chris and I were actually just talking while we were eating pizza just before you arrived about the fact that I did 20 US cities last year, and I may be rounding it up, but let's say this is it for the sake of the story. I believe in every single one of those cities, when I did a week of shows there, I'd be doing 5 to 7 shows a week. I would have at least one Comedy Film Nerds fan come up to me in every single one of those cities to say hello.
That's so great. That's
amazing, really cool. Right?
Guys, I love hearing that. I love hearing that you guys go out and support the guests and comics that are on the show. Yes. I love,
because you're never going to be disappointed.
No,
you know, we're literally going to have every comic here has been amazing.
That's what they came up and said.
Like, we heard you on Comedy Film Nerds. We thought you would be good. You didn't say that's not a knife once. Didn't say g'day.
Didn't move your arms around in that weird thing that Graham does.
You didn't come out in the pouch of a kangaroo.
Yes.
No, I do that. That's
great.
That's my one nod to my heritage.
You didn't have a didgeridoo opening.
Yeah. Self-signed boomerangs after the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, Will Anderson.
That would be the greatest. Like, get the crowd all pumped up and then that.
Or just do my act through a didgeridoo. Just... Just tapping the end, like, is this thing on? Like, come on.
Is this thing on? I love that.
So I did that. So I kind of went on the road in the US, which was brilliant, fun. And then I went home at the end of the year because I was doing my Illuminati show. So we filmed that.
And you had to kick the people out of your pool.
Right, exactly. Well, that was when I got literally one of the 2 weeks I've had back there. So I had a week in Sydney, and I was lucky enough during that week to be involved in two things. The radio station I used to work at, Triple J, which is the national youth broadcaster in Australia, was having a 40-year celebration thing. So I was lucky enough, I went back and did a shift on radio with this guy that I worked with for like 6 years, who I've not, you know, worked with in a radio, in our old radio station. That was a fun thing to do. But I also, on that very day, January 19th, filmed Willuminati at the Sydney Opera House in the main room, in the big concert hall, it's kind of the biggest, as an Australian performer, there are bigger rooms, but there is no bigger room.
Well, that's like
not
Carnegie
just
Hall.
As an Australian performer. I mean, to play, Sydney Opera House is pretty amazing.
That's like Carnegie Hall.
Correct.
Or,
yeah. That's worldwide.
Yeah. So we filmed my special there. So we did two shows just in a night and back to back. And film both those and like release that as a DVD, which people can buy in some countries at the moment. As I say to everybody else, you can't buy it in your country. If you can't buy it in your country, steal it. I don't mind. I honestly don't. I'd like people to see it. And if it's not available in your country, then I'd just like you to be able to see it. No problem for me. Pass it around, send it to somebody, whatever. If it's in a place where you can buy it so I can make more of them. But you know,
what region is it?
But you can download, there's iTunes downloads and Google Play perfect. And all those sort of things. So people can find it.
Do you have American DVD versions of it? Like, is it a...
No, there's no DVDs here yet. There's no American version DVDs. Uh-huh. Anyway, things that people don't need to hear about. But it turns out that I was the only person in Australia who didn't benefit from Netflix coming to Australia. Because... because my deal on my DVD at home has an Australia-specific deal, and I own the rights everywhere else in the world. But American Netflix only want to buy things they can play in Australia and in America, of course, like for Netflix. Right. And why would they buy the rights to my show in America, a place where no one knows me, and not get the rights in the one place where it would actually mean lots of people watch it on Netflix? Turns out they weren't that keen on that. So... we'll be going forward in a different direction, I guess. Stay tuned. In the meantime, steal it.
Well, that's cool. Well, hopefully if you ever get any USA versions, we'll sell them here. We'll sell them on this side.
Yeah, right.
In the meantime, Will has fired his business manager.
Yeah. You know what the worst thing is? I'll tell you, this is a little cautionary tale. I did my last film special because I do a brand new show every year. So like, this year was my 20th different hour-long show. But I don't film them all. I have recordings of them all. But, you know, I tended to like it to be a live experience. And because my show is so different from night to night, the idea of capturing like one night and it being the night was never something that particularly appealed to me. The other thing is that I filmed one in 2009, which was the first part of this two-part deal, right, that I had with Universal, who are my, like, you know, the DVD company, right? Mm-hmm. And I didn't really enjoy the experience, so I just didn't make another one. And then it got to, like, you know, 2015, and suddenly, like, oh, you know what, I want to make another special. Like, I'm ready, and I want to, like, film something, and I love this show, and, like, you know, it'll be the last night, so, you know, it's a good capture of that and all those sort of things. But in that time, like, you know, I have a DVD deal. DVDs basically don't exist anymore. Like, you know, in the time it's taken me to get to the second part of the deal, the technology has pretty much died out. And so just a tip, if you have a two-part deal, check if you think the technology will be around when you want to do the second part of the deal. Yeah, that would be my... I am still locked into a nine-part Sonograph deal.
Yeah.
And that's not even recording technology.
That launches on MySpace. Yeah. It's a big MySpace launch.
Well, if you wait long enough, the technology comes back.
Right, retro.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, yeah, exactly. I got a lot of cassette tapes of my previous show. Oh, really?
Hopefully we'll sell those on this site. That's why we don't have a pool.
Yes.
We're selling outdated technology.
Yeah, we just got Dana Gould's LPs in.
Literally.
Literally.
We have
Dana Gould's LPs for the collectors.
So next week we're doing the show on CB Radio, Channel 46. Check that out, Breaker Breaker, hashtag work it.
Everyone in the parking lot will be able to hear it.
Which might be more people.
Yeah. All right, well, let's do it. Let's talk about Terminator Genesis. Because I got a lot to say about
this. We're
going to
do a spoiler rep on it.
Oh, fantastic.
If this show wraps up soon enough, so Will can go to a show, because my flight was late.
Yeah.
All right.
Should we let the guest go first?
Let's let the guest.
Okay, well, here's what I'll say, firstly, that I enjoyed about this film. I enjoyed the fact that last time I came here, we talked about Pacific Rim, and my main complaint about that film was that they had two people playing Australians who weren't Australians.
Right.
So this feels like a balance in the force, because the two leads in this film are both Australians.
Right.
John Connor and Kyle, what's his face?
Reese
who gets sent back. So they're both Australian actors, and there was points in this movie where I was like, why didn't they just get some Americans?
So Jason Clarke is an Australian actor.
Yeah.
God, I didn't know that, man. He's amazing.
Right. He is good, but this is not spoilery, and I won't spoil it, but he also plays a certain type of person in everything that he plays.
Yes.
And when you see him on screen in this film, there is a twist in this that I won't reveal, obviously, in this part of it, but I think most people will see coming anyway. But there's where you go, couldn't they have got a guy who was more sympathetic? Like, you know, sometimes actors just announce themselves and you go, ah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. This isn't going to all go smoothly. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he really kind of came on the scene in the Zero Dark 30 as the like, one of the CIA interrogators.
He was really good in that.
He was really good in that because he has that scene where he's like, you know, he's very calmly telling the guys that he's about to torture, like, for information, I'm not your friend. It's going to get really ugly for you. And he's saying it, like, while he's eating ice cream or whatever.
He was in the Planet of the Apes reboot, the recent one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know.
And that was sort of his scared scientist version.
Right.
And he also had the thing about an actor like that, too, he also has a certain look, even, like, when he's passively on screen. It's almost like some of these actors, like Michael Shannon and Paul Dano, they exude a type of personality and character without ever acting or saying anything. And sometimes if the character's against that type that you see, it's harder to dig out of that hole sometimes.
Right.
Like, but, you know, a good actor can do it. But, you know, you're not going to see Michael Shannon as some sympathetic character that's not creepy, ever.
Well, yeah.
So there was two guys, Jai Courtney and Jason, and of course Sam Worthington was in the previous one. And there is a part of me, because I love the Terminator idea. Right. I'm a big fan of the first two films. I think are fantastic.
Yes,
and in fact on 4th of July they were playing Terminator 2 again. You know, for America. And
we're celebrating that we're the leaders of the cause of Skynet killing off humanity. Sure.
We were rewatching it, and it still just stands up, I think, as a really it's a great film. It's really well paced. Like, you know, the action scenes are really well constructed and put together. Solid. And, you know, it has a real sort of momentum and pace and, you know, dynamic to it.
It does
and
the right thing a sequel's supposed to do.
Right.
Really. Yeah.
And it kind of builds on it a bit. And the idea is a better idea, like as in like the concept of Terminator 2,
right?
Like, it just takes it, they understand their idea a little bit more and they fully explore it. And then after that, it's just obviously got messy for me,
right?
Like, I haven't really I've enjoyed bits and pieces of the other ones.
Well, you also have the original filmmaker, James Cameron, doing the first two.
Right.
It's like, you know, I think in part why the new Mad Max was so good, because it was George Miller.
I was just going to say that, because like that's the problem.
The original vision.
With Rise of the Machines and then Salvation, you just didn't...
How many have there been again? They all just blend together.
This is the fifth one. So you have Terminator 2, Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines, Salvation, and then Genesis, which is
the one with the girl Terminator.
I think that's Rise of the Machines.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's three. Nick, that's the Nick Stahl one.
Well, it's interesting that none of us can kind of remember exactly the plot of those.
Yeah, they all blend
because
together.
The filmmakers in this one have also decided to ignore the plot of those ones after that. Because it is a very referential film to the first two films.
Right.
Yes.
Like, basically the first half of the movie is almost a scene by scene. Like, it was like one of those, you know, the Gus Van Sant remake of Psycho. Like, it was basically, they were just...
what's his name?
Vince Vaughn.
Vince Vaughn was
right. Yeah, and you can see Anne Heche's butthole, I believe.
Oh,
Kevin Smith. The Kevin Smith bot told me that on his podcast. It's kind of cool. You get to see, like, you know, the original Terminator, and that they've got the technology, and like Arnie going back, and, you know, all this sort of stuff. You know, stuff that people have kind of seen in the previews and stuff, and it's just set up. And I kind of enjoyed that. But all it really made me wish for the rest of the film was that.
Oh, I wish I was watching one or two.
Right. Or I wish that the person who'd made one or two made the rest of this film.
Right.
Because it's someone who's done a really good mashup of the first two films in the first half of the film. But, you know, sometimes someone can be a good DJ and do a good mashup, but you don't want to hear their solo album. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? No. You're like, just DJ, man.
And the second half.
Don't write your own songs.
And the second half
it's
of this
like a
film,
really good cover band.
Right.
Like when they, this is our first track of original. Ooh, no.
Oh, yeah.
No, Keep Doing Wanted Dead or Alive.
Who are the guys? A Steel Panther.
Yes, like, yes.
Essentially, the second half is like when Steel Panther does one of their own songs.
Yeah. You know, the guy takes off his wig and goes, this is who I really am. Yeah. No. Put the fucking spandex back on and turn on the I love the guy with the long hair who then has the fan that blows his hair. Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to hear his real story.
Right.
You know?
So I thought that, I didn't mind the first, like, oh, I hated. Okay, so we don't need to see Judgment Day again. And we don't need to see, like, I think they're spending too much time, all that stuff at the start where they're in the future and John Connor's making the speech to, you're like, basically you've just launched into a terribly confusing battle scene, like, and like a speech by somebody that we have not got to know and have not, like, you know, have any, well, you know, we know it's John Connor, but A, you don't assume that everybody is up to date, because then you spend half of a movie telling everyone they're not up to date and here's all this other stuff. And so I thought it started badly, but then I kind of felt like, the third after that, when it was kind of revisiting all that old stuff, I kept going, oh, this could be okay. This is like taking the source material and seems to have like be, you know, I didn't have as much of a problem with the alternative reality thing as some people did. Mm-hmm. Like some people immediately were like, well, we don't want to see an alternative reality, right? And I kind of get that. But I have a podcast that's in an alternative reality. So I'm not the person to talk. You know what I mean? Like FOFOP is really Terminator Genesis to TOFOP. So... So I didn't mind that aspect of it, and I thought it gave them like a, you know, a lot of potential to kind of really change the story and really kind of you know, get back into what the story was about and all that stuff about, you know, because obviously, you know, Skynet is the cloud, right? Skynet or Genesis, like, is the cloud,
right?
And we're in that right now.
So they're trying to put and I if you were to tell me going into this without seeing a trailer, that's what they're going to kind of do, is there, because when the first movie came out 30 years ago, there wasn't a cloud.
There wasn't an iPhone.
There wasn't an internet, really. Nothing. So now we have these things, and there was this opportunity, albeit a very missed opportunity, for them to go, hey, now you see where this could go. The cloud has all of our information.
All of it.
They're tapped into all this thing.
Right.
You know, and they could have done something interesting of like, so these cyber attacks that we keep happening. So like the North Korea one, right, that happened in, last year, and supposedly it was to prevent the movie.
I know. Unfortunately, it failed.
It failed. but a lot of people think it could have been disgruntled Sony employees who were trying to make it look like North Korea.
For sure.
You could have done something really interesting to go, oh, that was when Skynet was just feeling it's like it's testing its power, and you could have been like, oh god, that's so creepy, and you'd get this feeling in the theater like, oh shit, we're living it, and instead they just kind of ging like,
yeah. It was like,
and
I
you've
mean,
got
I,
like some CIA office that starts noticing all this extra activity, like spikes and stuff.
Every second episode of Person of Interest has a better like plot about this topic than this movie does. Like,
well, I'll tell you,
because there's so much good stuff to work with in that field.
Very, very true. And Will hits like a really interesting point about this movie. It really set up a lot of good intentions. Like, you really could see this movie wanted to be like, well, we're going to reboot the franchise, but we're going to be referential to the other movies. We're going to have Arnold Schwarzenegger. So we're going to not only tell you a new story, we're going to tap into the nostalgia, and then we're going to put a new modern twist on the whole mythology. That was the intention. And it missed the mark on every count, because I wanted to really like it. I wanted to like Schwarzenegger in. I wanted to
I was excited about that. Seeing the young Schwarzenegger and the new one, I was like, oh, let's see how they do this.
Yeah, and even just the, like, I guess everyone was looking forward to the explanation of why is he old. And I actually thought they did it okay.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
That was handled okay. Here's the analogy I will make. It's if this movie is if Mad Max was not done by the genius who created it, but by a guy that does a lot of TV, Alan fucking whoever your name is, Alan Taylor, Game of Thrones.
He did the second Thor film.
Yeah, he did. It's all TV. Now, granted, really good TV show. Yeah,
right.
Boardwalk Empire, Nurse Jackie, Mad Men. I mean, Sopranos. These are really good shows. But
that doesn't mean you can direct a Terminator movie.
No,
there's still a disconnect. I mean, you know.
Are you honestly? Because here's the thing, and this is why. Like we said, it was George Miller's crazy version. Him going, well, now 30 years later, we have all this stuff. Like, imagine if Cameron would have done this movie and said,
right,
well, this is the movie. That was kind of why Terminator 2 was so great. He goes, well, now we have a budget.
Right, and this is the movie I wanted to make 30 years ago, something like that.
Or now, in the last 30 years, just in the last 15 years, seeing technology do this, these are all these things I wanted to add to this story.
Absolutely. But, and the also...
Like, I mean, literally, the world has become more like the world that Terminator was parodying or like warning us about or like whatever. And yet they incorporated less of that into the story.
Right.
But also what you say about like, you know, having a vision for things. And again, this is not spoilery. There is a time travel leap in like the second half of the film where suddenly a bunch of people from out of time are in this new time, a time that is not familiar to any of them.
Right.
And they do not do one thing with that.
Nothing.
Like, not one. Like, one of the great things about Terminator 2 is that, you know, sort of he's a person that, like, you know, that Arnold Schwarzenegger's Terminator is trying to learn to be a person. Right. It's a fish out of water thing.
And this movie just bounces from one action set piece to the next action set piece, and you just get
there's a fight in an office block. Yeah. Like, you're in a time travel film and you're having a fight in an office block. The one thing that will look exactly the same in any time. Like, to me, what will look most the same? An office block. We'll just have a fight in an office.
Yeah.
I feel like, and I
just change the computer monitors.
I wonder, because the director, Alan Taylor, like, has done so much good stuff, I wonder how much of this is like, was it his fault or was it like, the studio dangled feature film in front of him and then sort of made him have
Well, he could only direct the script that he got. And the main problem with this is by far the script.
Yeah, and
terrible.
And it's one of those things that tried to serve so many different masters that it ended up serving no one. You know, you want to be retro, you want to be new, you want to be a mashup, you want to be referential to the old movies. But you're right, though. It was only the first two movies that it was referential to. And it was also some weird casting, too. Like, I don't want to give anything away. We'll get into it more. But I was hoping at one point there would have been a Terminator Doctor Who crossover.
Right.
I'm like, okay, now it's getting a little interesting. Yeah.
I thought the casting was, I mean, I like the girl who's the lead in it in the Game of Thrones. She plays Khaleesi in Game of Thrones. But
if you hadn't seen Game of Thrones and she was spouting this ridiculous dopey dialogue, you would think, well, gosh, this actress is horrible.
And
she's not. She had literally nothing to work with. Right. That was the problem.
One of the problems, too, is like if you're going to reboot.
That was me. I don't watch Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
One of the most iconic, Linda Hamilton's Sarah Connor is like just stunning. Stunning. That's your Furiosa from Max.
And
it's
the arc.
Right.
Of her from 1 to 2, where she's just a scared waitress who's like, what the fuck? And then
she's in a mental ward in the second.
Right.
Yes, because she's like this.
As hard and as like, you know, survival as you can ever be.
Yeah.
Right. And then, so that's already hard to like, you know, to step into those shoes, right? But then to have that person say several of the like lines and stuff that so you're like, oh, now we're getting a direct comparison.
Yeah.
To that person saying those. It felt like she was way too young for it, even though I know it was set in a time where she was younger. But, you know, with this story and... Yeah.
She didn't have the gravitas of, like, a Linda Hamilton. And also, it was the way the characters were developed. Right. There was literally nothing there. I mean, there's nothing to hang your hat on at the end except just one action piece that even, like, Schwarzenegger. Like, granted, he's the Terminator. You don't expect, you know, a lot of range, but... It was almost a parody of what he was doing.
His stuff felt like that.
Yeah.
It felt too comic.
Yes.
You know, too much.
Yeah, and why didn't they develop, if they could have, there's so much room here. So they explain why he's gotten old, but couldn't they explain, his central processing unit or whatever has adapted and now he's more human-like or
some kind of upgrade or something like in all that
thing
time.
That makes you go,
weirdly enough, and this, you know, we'll probably get into more of these in the spoiler episode, but like they set up a lot of interesting things like that. Yeah. Like there are a lot of things in the film where you go, like, I mean, there's another one where, this is not, so Sarah Connor has an awareness of the story of the, so she has some knowledge and there's a central storyline. I won't give too much away, but there's a central storyline where it could be changed because she has too much awareness of what was going to happen to her future. Mm-hmm. And there's this, like, touched into this really interesting area of like, oh, you know, do you still do that thing or have any excitement for that thing if you know that it's your preordained sort of destiny?
And are you fated to, no matter what you do, this is going to happen again?
Like, and I was like, well, this is interesting.
Yes,
As actors and like on a, you know, there's some stuff there that they could have really, you know, got them to work with. Even like the fact that
instead you get come with me if you want to live.
Well, let's get into the specifics in the spoiler wrap because we don't want to.
But I really
think
we were
all disappointed.
I really think this movie was a missed opportunity, and it's interesting. It's like, well, I'm sure we'll get the comparison. Well, why did you like Jurassic World and not this one?
Sure.
And again, it was an
emotional... For the record, I didn't listen to my episode of FOFOP all about it.
Well, no, we had some. You were one of the people that split.
Absolutely, Steele Saunders too.
Well, let me ask you this then. So why did you not like Jurassic? And then, like, did you like Mad Max?
Oh, yeah, I love Mad Max.
Okay, so explain why these fall on different sides of the fence for you.
Okay, so, I mean, I'll do a really quick explanation, and if people want to hear me bang on about every single scene in the movie and why every single one of them's almost wrong, I will do that. But here's the thing. The dinosaurs are great. It's like my same thing with the Transformers movies. I have this exact same thing that I say every time. One less Transformer, one less dinosaur. Spend that exact same money on a decent writer and you still make, you just make a great film instead of like, my right. thing with Jurassic, everyone would go, the dinosaurs were great in Jurassic World. You know, it's just a, I'm like, literally name any movie that is out at the moment and put those dinosaurs in it and it is a better movie than Jurassic World. Like, think, you know, seriously, take any movie that's out of the cinema and instead of what they put in between the dinosaurs and Jurassic World, put that in between and it is a better
That's
film.
True. If you had Terminators versus dinosaurs, I would have been on board a little more. But
me, Earl, the dying girl and the dinosaur. Yeah. That's a better film.
Nice and that's segue. It's an emotional reaction because like what happens is like with Jurassic World, like I said, because I was emotionally had a reaction to I'm enjoying this. You forego and overlook all of the very obvious plot holes and problems with the movie. Now with Terminator, I had the opposite reaction. I was like, you know, I kind of want to like it. Ooh, I don't. And now I'm going to reject everything even more because it's getting dumber and dumber, dumber.
I'll tell you
my
what
emotional
it is.
Reaction is that I've now wasted 2 hours.
Yeah. No, I'll tell you what it is for me. I have absolutely no problem with a movie being as ridiculous as it wants to be. Like a friend of mine had a real problem with the guitarist on the front of the thing in Mad Max. And I was like, no. Because to me, yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But in this world that they've created so perfectly.
In this context.
It all makes sense.
It makes perfect
like,
sense.
We don't need to know why the guys are spraying their mouth. Maybe it's like, you know, because their leader wears a silver thing. Maybe it's the Valhalla myth. They don't need to tell us because they've established enough of this world that logically makes sense.
Right.
They worship automobiles. They're separated into these things. Mm-hmm. Everything in this movie makes sense within the world that we have constructed.
And you can add your own backstory. Like we added like a career path for the drummers that, you know, the best one, the front drummer eventually gets to be the guitarist and the truck.
Right. But I mean, that's us. Like, I mean, you guys would be doing the podcast about the, you know, you'd be doing your skill, right?
Yeah.
And you'd be up the front whistling. Yeah.
But oh, I can't wait for the apocalypse.
I my problem comes in movies where they set up things like within their world and then completely they make then no logic to the world. I'll give you two just quick examples.
You're going to say Prometheus.
Right. Yeah, that's a good example. But I'll give you the examples of the two movies that you mentioned, Jurassic World and the Terminator film. Mm. I won't give a spoiler on this, but there's a scene at the end of the – like basically the way this film – like finishes completely negates logically in the universe they've set up anything that's happened.
Sure.
Like that just annoys me because I'm like, well, you set up
in the Terminator movie.
Right. Yeah. In the Terminator movie. There is a scene in Jurassic World, which is the big famous scene where the reveal of the raptors, right?
Yeah.
They reveal that the Megasaurus, the abominus, abdominus rex, whatever his name is.
Adonis Rex.
Right. Whatever he is. They reveal, because he can communicate with the raptors, because Chris Pratt's trained the raptors.
Yeah.
He's the raptors alpha. By the way, that could never happen.
Yeah.
They're the villains of the. No. It's like Caesar Milan's coming and train the Nazis. Oh, no, they're good now. Right? Like he goes at Hitler and everything's fine. Like that's already so stupid. Like such a stupid premise. And he can barely contain them. Even the person who's raised them from birth, like he's like, oh, I'm their alpha. I can control them. The whole time Vincent D'Onofrio is like, we should weaponize this completely unreliable technology. Weaponize it. But then there's that scene and they get to the dinosaur and then suddenly they stop and it's a really cool, it's one of the coolest scenes in the film, right? And suddenly, hang on, what's going on? Like they were charging towards it and now they're communicating and then up in the the booth there's that revelation. They're like, oh my god, and what's in there? And then finally that they put Raptor in there and like, you know, now it's communicating with them. I'm like, literally 40 minutes ago you told me in this film that this dinosaur had been raised in it, like without ever meeting another dinosaur. Chris Pratt makes a point of it early in the movie going, one of the problems with this dinosaur is it's never communicated with any other dinosaurs. It doesn't know how to. That's literally, you say that in your film. And now 40 minutes later, it can just talk because it has raptor blood in it. Like if someone put raptor transfusion in me, I couldn't talk to a raptor. It doesn't work like that. Like I was born in Australia, but if I was raised in a jungle, I wouldn't be able to walk out into the street after 20 years and go, g'day, mate. Hey. Yeah, throw a shoe on the barbie. It doesn't work like that. Like in the universe you've set up, it does not work like that.
Oh, fuck, that's awesome.
Makes me want to see Jurassic World again.
So now, you know, there was a lot of time, though, that Indominus Rex was not on screen. He could have been listening to tapes. Yeah.
Yeah, he got out. He got some tapes.
Good point.
All that time he wasn't using his camouflage.
Yeah, right. There was like
that thing from earlier that he probably would have used all the time, but yeah, anyway, whatever.
He only used once.
Yeah.
To prank the people who'd been looking after him.
I think he got some Raptor Rosetta Stones.
Exactly.
And I think he was studying in his off time.
Yep. On the flight.
It makes sense. It makes sense to me, Will.
Bede Wong was playing him some tapes.
That's awesome. I love these. I love these blockbuster debates. Well, let's get into one of the movies that, as Will mentioned, would be good with dinosaurs in it, which is Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl.
And raptors. What did you say?
And raptors.
Yeah.
So, all right. If to those of you listening to... those of you who are like, all right, all of this, I don't give a shit about dinosaurs or Terminator, and, you know, I'm a little done with the blockbusters. They kind of have played out for me this summer. Go see Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl. It is, it has none of these things we've talked about. There is no alternate timelines. It is just, it's based on a Jesse Andrews book, who actually does the screenplay as well. And it's directed by Alfonso Gomez Rijon. So it's really good, solid young actors.
So wait, an actual writer wrote the script?
An actual writer wrote the script. And now here's an example that now this director has done a lot of TV. He's done Glee, American Horror Story. His only other feature is this movie called The Town That Dreaded Sundown. But this movie, I think, first of all, yeah, the script is great because the novelist did the screenplay.
Right.
So while adapting a novel is a specific skill, I think it's easier when the novelist does it, obviously. So
no one's going to know it better.
No one's going to know it better. And it's really...
But what's the basic premise? Is it...
Here's the thing. It's based on this kid, Greg, you know, who spends this time.
He's the me, I imagine.
Yeah, he's the me. He plays me.
Yeah.
Greg. So he's this sort of quirky kid, you know, and the movie starts out and it's very cool. He goes, you know, there's all these different worlds in my high school and I just am kind of friends with all of them. You know, I'm friends with the jocks and the weirdos and all this other stuff. And he's got this buddy of his who's Earl, and they make parodies of classic movies in short films because he's got these crazy... I can't even go... Like, all right. So he's got... Nick Offerman plays his dad. Connie Britton plays his mom. Nick Offerman plays a tenured professor who's never works. He's always at home in his pajamas eating weird, esoteric, you know, hippie academic food and watching classic movies. So he talks about... He was watching like Clockwork Orange at like age 6. I identified with this because this is kind of what my life was a little bit. So they make these hilarious parodies. And there's really funny moments in the movie. And the movie, early on in the movie, there's this girl who has been diagnosed with cancer. And his mom's like, you need to go play with her and be nice and be her friend. He's like, oh, I don't want to. So he begrudgingly does that. And of course they strike up this friendship.
That was their meet cute. I don't want to meet the girl with cancer.
Yeah. That's basically what it was. So, and the mom of the girl with cancer is played by Molly Shannon. She does a really amazing job of playing a single mom who is trying to keep her shit together while her daughter is battling leukemia, and the kid comes over and Molly Shannon's had a couple too many drinks, so it's sort of funny because she's like, oh, she's flirting with the teenage boy, you know, like doesn't cross the line but walks up to it. But obviously the director did a great job. This is a difficult thing to do with somebody like Molly Shannon. You come out of the SNL world and it's big, crazy characters. It's right. Over the top. But when you dial them down to reality, holy shit, is it great to watch. I'm not saying Molly Shannon wasn't funny when she did her big funny characters, but in a movie like this, you can't be over the top. You have to be rooted in reality, and they do that. And so the moments that are funny are really funny, and the moments that are really touching and heartfelt and sad are really strong. Mm. And it's just one of that, like, you know, this trend of, like, The Fault in Your Stars type movies, those novels are being made into movies and they're being made really well. Like there's another movie coming out I saw the trailer for, Paper Town, which is done by the same author that did Fault in Our Stars. And, you know, this is a really solid movie and it's got hilarious, especially fans of this show, it's got so many hilarious film jokes.
Oh, cool.
The way they parody Seven Seal and just like all this.
Well, it sounds like it was the perfect time to release it, too. Like perfect. Where it's great counter-programming to all the big, you know, tentpoles.
And I would, it's one of those movies like, do you have to see it in the big screen? Not necessarily, but I would say it's one of those like vote with your dollar movies. If you are tired of this, these big tentpole movies that are making all this money, this is a movie you need to give.
And this is the time. I don't think Hollywood's quite caught on 100% yet, but this is the perfect movie that should go on demand along with a theatrical release.
Right.
So people that want to see it, I don't want to deal with the multiplex, but I want to see something cool. Can just put it on their TV and just you know, pay the $8.99 or whatever or $9.99 and just watch it when it comes out, because this probably won't do huge in theatrical.
It's not going to do big theatrical numbers, but you're absolutely right. And they need
date night movie. Go and see the movie about the girl dying of leukemia.
Maybe. I mean, maybe there's a laugh out loud.
Depends on the girl.
Depends on the girl.
You like the Hunger Games, and kids died in that.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's how you sell this as a date night movie.
This one just takes more time.
Right. Yeah. It's like a slow Hunger Games.
Yeah, it's just with just one kid.
Right. Yeah.
fighting to advance. Yeah, but this is a really solid movie, and it's the writing, it's exactly what we talked about. It's everything that Terminator Genesis has missed.
Right.
Is it just has solid writing, solid characters, really good scenes. The kid who plays Earl, god damn, is he funny. What's his name? RJ Seiler. He has some hilarious, he has some of the funniest lines in the whole film. He's just, you know, he was tried as a dancer, but he plays this like stone faced kid, and it's a funny, solid movie.
Cool,
check it out.
So something for everyone at the multiplex this weekend.
Yes. It's Me and Earl and Dying Girl. It's one of those movies you need to search out and find.
Right.
Because after you watch it, you're gonna really glad you saw it.
So when you know it's the one screen that Terminator's not on at your movie theater.
Well, yeah, that's exactly why I went to see it. I was like, I'd already seen Terminator.
Right. It's playing what, 6 to 8? You know, it's there's 14 screens here. Oh, but 9 of them have Terminator on.
And
them.
5 of them are Magic Mike, and the other 5 are Ted 2. Right. And then there's this. You know,
I have not seen Magic Mike XXL. But I did an entire episode of my podcast where I tried to guess the plot just based on having seen the preview. So if people want to hear that, if someone's seen it and they can tell me what I got right and wrong, that'd be great. But my big fear is, and this is just from the previews, from the Magic Mike XXL previews, is that it's done what I like to call a Mighty Ducks 2, where somewhere on the journey they will meet some urban people who will teach them to loosen up and shake out. It happens in Mighty Ducks too, when they're like playing, the Ducks are playing for Team America, and then they go out and they find those black kids playing street hockey.
Yeah.
And then they learn from them, and then the Ducks get their mojo back. And there's a big smell of a scene in this that is going to, I just can smell it from the trailer. I may be completely wrong. I may be doing them a disservice, but I believe there will be a scene where the stripping troop meet up some black strippers.
Well, let us hope. Yeah.
And there might be a scene of them working out.
Maybe.
My favorite thing is I read that there's 6 choreographed numbers in the film, which means that they have to find 6 excuses to break into dance, which is always my favorite thing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I always like there'll be a dance off of some kind.
Yeah, well maybe one was like
strip off.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Wait, are you trying to tell me you think you could do that move better? Prove it. Like, somebody hit the music.
Maybe there's a West Side Story dance fight.
Oh, right.
Let's hope. I hope there's a dance fight. All right. Well, what else do we want to get into?
So we want to talk, you've been seeing a lot of the summer movies, Will. What have you really liked so far this summer, and what are you looking forward to?
I liked Mad Max a lot. Mm-hmm. That was, you know, probably the highlight of everything that I saw.
What do you think of Avengers?
Yeah, look, I some people really didn't like it. Mm-hmm. I thought with everything that Joss Whedon had to do, Like, because that's, you can't make a movie right. anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, he's got so many things on the list of what you have to get checked off in the next 2.5 hours that I think it would almost be more impressive if we saw, like, what he had to put in at first. Because basically it's like watching MasterChef, right? And when you get one of those challenges where they give you 18 ingredients and you have right. to use every ingredient in the dish. And the thing is that some of those yeah. ingredients are actually going to spoil, like, the thing that you would make with, like, say, 8 ingredients.
Right.
But the challenge is, how do you best incorporate
all of those? You have to put in 12.
You have to put them all in.
Yeah.
Like, that's the game, right? And I feel like that's what that movie was. I felt like they were introducing so many different things and doing so many different bits of business that he did. I thought he actually did a pretty good job of, like, pulling it all together and making it entertaining.
It was quite a balancing act, for sure, because, you know, you've got the mandate of, you got to introduce these new characters, you've got to service these new characters, you have to set up these movies, you know, that are coming up. It's like, well, how do I, you know, do all that? I think he pulled it off. I really did.
Those films are so, they need their own category. And I don't mean superhero category. I mean the Marvel Universe category, where you have to, like you say, there's a list of 30. We need this character. We need this storyline. We need this, like, the movie is so dense. Oh, and by the way, you need to have just amazing special effect fight action sequences.
I mean, they're comic books come to life. Comic books would always, you know, the Marvel Universe and DC Universe is like, oh, well, this character is guest starring in this comic, and now we have the Avengers, but then Iron Man and, you know, Captain America, they have their own books too. So, mm-hmm. and that's really what it is. But that wasn't easy to do. And the other thing, what would happen is, like, and this happened with Spider-Man, if the older comic book readers will remember, is the characters get oversaturated. You've got, like, a Spider-Man book, and then you've got, well, no, there's a second Spider-Man book, and then Spider-Man's guest starring in the Avengers. Right. And then to really get the whole story, you have to buy everything, and that gets really tiring very fast. I'm like, well, I just want to read one Spider-Man book a month. I don't need to know what is going on in all these 6 other books just to get this one story. So, and I think the danger is with the Marvel Universe is don't spread out too many branches. You know, stick to, you know, what you've been doing, ramp it up slowly, and don't make me have to see these other 4 movies to understand what's happening in this one.
Yeah, and they keep it all relatable. But By the way,
I see all those movies.
Yeah,
and I watch all of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So I'm like,
you're on board. Yeah,
I'm on board.
Yeah.
And
I will say that pitfall they haven't fallen into yet.
Don't need to, because DC's going to kick themselves into that fucking thing.
Oh yeah, they're already on their way.
Reading this article about what DC's doing with Wonder Woman, I'm just like,
yeah. They're making another Flash. Like, they already have a Flash on TV. Then they're going to make
it. Which is great.
It is great. I love the
TV show, The Flash.
The Flash and Arrow were fantastic. Well,
the Flash has made, I was always like, I liked Arrow.
Right.
But I was like, not 100% sold on it. Right.
Right.
But The Flash, like, and all the stuff they've done with the crossovers in that universe has made me like Arrow more.
Absolutely.
Like, I think they're both better shows because of The Flash. And that kid who's the lead in The Flash.
He's great.
And, you know, and they do respect the right way. His dad is like the guy who played the original Flash on the TV show. And, like, it has a sense of history, but it does that
really. Hamill did the same character, the trickster again.
it was really fun. And it was just the complete opposite to Gotham. The Flash was really fun, but
it understood the source material,
right?
And they do these great little Easter eggs too in the Flash, where they're at Ferris Airlines, and they're like, "Well, what happened? This place is closed down." Well, they lost a test pilot a while back, and that was, you know, Green Lantern,
right?
So, and then they show the Suicide Squad, and there's all these little Easter eggs, and it's fantastic. But the thing that's fascinating to me in a very bad way is, like, you have the successful character, The Flash. You have a successful TV show. Why in God's name now would you start to develop another Flash for the movie Flash that's only going to be in the Justice League movie?
What are they doing?
Stop. Just stop. It makes
Marvel's
no sense.
Marvel's got it.
Yeah, like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Like, do what Marvel's doing.
There's not a film version.
Right.
Yeah. There's not a film version of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I will see all of your movies. DC, if you do it as good as Marvel, I'll see all the fucking Marvel movies, and I'll see all the goddamn DC movies.
And here's a little secret. You have great characters to work with.
Better characters, in my opinion.
It's not like Bill Gates looked at Steve Jobs and went, "Well, they're making computers. We're going to make wooden boxes."
Yeah.
Or let's make computers worse.
Yeah, that's what we're going to make them bigger and less portable and harder to understand
and slower.
Yeah.
Go.
All right, good. Yeah.
What are you looking forward to?
That's interesting. I'm not looking forward to the Batman and the Superman movie. I don't care. I don't care. I'm not actually. I thought I would be.
You and I haven't talked about this really.
Well, that's not even this summer. That's next summer.
Right. Yeah, of course. Yeah,
whatever. We still have a right to not look forward to it.
But people who know my affinity with those films, which were they were showing the other day on the TV, and I watched like from start to finish. Like again, just like I didn't want to. I did not have 9 hours, and then I just went,
I don't know what arguments you're about to make, but I just want to say that whatever they are, I agree with them.
Yep.
No, it's
I'm
honestly
not looking
like,
forward to
like,
it either.
It was funny. You joked about it. I think it was Podfest 2 years ago because the announcement had just been made about Ben Affleck. The joke you made was everyone on the internet was concerned that you and I are we okay with the Ben Affleck announcement? Ben Affleck is the least of my worries with this new thing. So what do you like?
Okay, I'm absolutely with you. Like, firstly, okay, unless they tape over the Christopher Nolan ones to make these films, just I'm fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they've nailed it.
Yeah.
Like, they've nailed Batman.
They got
it. Firstly, why are they making more Batman so quickly? You just nailed something. Just do a few victory laps for a while. Seinfeld didn't jump into another shitty show straight after Seinfeld.
No,
you got to get into Justice League. That's
took a lap of honor for five years, right? You know?
It's all marketing. It's like, oh, well, this is hot. Well, then we got to ruin it.
Right.
this DC internally has.
I don't know what's going on because they, you know, they've got all these great comic book creators there. Just let them do like the TV. They're starting to do that, like Arrow and even Flash. There's comic book writers on the staff.
But I don't know why Batman. But then Gotham.
Gotham's a disaster.
It had great moments. We both got it. You were like, Graham, you got to check out Gotham. And
yeah,
I started to get
exactly.
into it. The Bruce Wayne, the young Bruce Wayne
fantastic.
Stuff. Fantastic. Yep. The Alfred. I didn't know he was some special op guy.
And that is actually true. Right. That's from the comics.
That's from the comics. And it's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of the, like, it became a horror, like...
Like some weird American horror story. And then, like, oh, now every Batman villain is the Joker. It's just
also,
a crazy psychotic killer.
Also, now everyone already lives here.
Right.
Like, and everyone's already, like, do you mean, like...
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So I want to.
But
you know,
yeah, sorry. I was
about Batman,
gonna,
Superman.
I was just going to briefly say on that topic though that Jada Pinkett Smith is, I believe, in Magic Mike XXL, and my prediction for her performance will be subtle.
Oh, I bet you her neck's gonna move.
I had a lot of problems with the first Superman film.
A
lot of problems.
I've never seen anyone angrier than Mike Schmidt about it. But yes, none of us liked it.
You didn't say me immediately after I watched it.
Okay.
Where I decided I had to go back and watch it again immediately just because I knew that I was going to talk angrily about it to other people. And I wanted to make sure, because I wasn't, when I was first watching it, I wasn't paying attention to the things I hated enough to explain why I hated them to other people. But I knew, I was like, I'm going to need some points to back this up. Yeah, you'll get another $16, but you'll hear about it through bad word of mouth. At the moment, I just have a general feeling I hate it, but by the end of this next hour and a half, I'm going to have some very specific points to make.
That's such wonderful nerd rage.
Yeah. But Zack Snyder just, like, to me, like...
Completely missed it.
And he's completely missed it on a whole bunch of things that I like, to be honest. Or not always. Like, he always gets, like, some stuff right, which is obviously why he keeps getting gigs and stuff. Right. But
I will say, going back, I still like 300.
Yeah, I agree.
Yep.
Yeah, and seeing the second one that he didn't direct, like that he only produced.
And it wasn't bad.
Yeah.
The second one, it was ridiculous and fun and goofy, but it was still, it was good.
But the rest of the stuff, I always feel like he takes pretty great source material and doesn't do a particularly excellent job with it.
Right.
So I just have like almost checked out of it. That's what I feel like has happened to me. Like, I just keep seeing people will reveal, like, when they, you know, revealed, yeah, they'll just reveal, even the Suicide Squad Joker, you know, when Jared Leto and the internet burnt down, and I was just like, meh.
Yeah, I'm not getting as excited about it.
Well, I just don't feel it's far enough away from the Heath Ledger. Like, imagine if after the Jack Nicholson one, like, 2 years later, they just had another thing with a different guy playing the Joker in it.
Right.
Like, it's too soon.
I think it's funny. I think I've had a similar reaction. I was reading Entertainment Weekly, and they had this big Batman Superman thing, and I was just like, I read a little thing about Wonder Woman because I'm like, well.
Well, the movie's already too crowded. That's what's hilarious. And they're already saying, oh, there might be cameos from other superheroes. I'm like, no. No, stop. Just tell the one story. Right. That's all you have to do.
And it's funny. Like,
yeah, you don't need to remake the Entourage movie, but with superheroes. No,
right, exactly.
Wonder Woman's just cruising down the street in the invisible
place. An Entourage needed to be crowded with cameos. Right. That's its bread and that's like a joke of that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I feel the same way. So anytime I see something about it, I just go, huh? I'm not like enraged. I see, you know, Ben Affleck. And
but I'm not excited about it.
I'm not excited. I can't.
Just don't care.
I don't even know if I'm going to go see it. Like, I guess I will.
You will.
I mean, I'll see it.
For the show, but I'm just like.
But how many times?
I mean, you know.
I'll see it once, and I bet you I'm going to see it once, and I'm going to not be. I don't think I'm going to come out of there like.
You know what's interesting? The more you hate it, the greater the chances that you'll see it again.
Oh, absolutely. No. I will have to see Jurassic World again, but I just can't yet. I didn't see it in 3D the first time, and I do want to go and see Jurassic World in 3D, so at least one of the things in the movie is three-dimensional. Boom, take that.
Will Anderson, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know. I
wonder if they take that into consideration, the box office analysts are like, well, we're going to get a lot of extra money from hate watching.
Yeah. Hate watching.
Or I'd like to, if they actually came up with, like, if they go, look, the 3D glasses for the main cinema here, they're like $20. But if you want 3D characters, you can get them. It's just an extra. We've actually shot those scenes. They just don't play well in China. So, but if you want to see that version, we will
it's
show you.
Another $5.
Right.
Oh, that's probably true. Yeah. I'm not excited for it. I can't get on board.
Although, here's what I will say.
There's a pair of glasses that give characters nuance.
I would love, this is an interesting, I've never been a big Star Wars person. I've always kind of said that there's like 1.5 good Star Wars films, which is like Empire Strikes Back and half of Star Wars. And the rest of it, I can really just like, you know, take or leave. But I'm quite excited about the new Star Wars film. They've got me back. Like,
oh, good.
I was kind of like, you know what? This kind of looks like this might be fun.
Yeah. I am excited about.
Me too.
And and like we said, I don't. We maybe you heard us talk about this, but we've talked to Steele Saunders about coming to Australia to watch it on opening night.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you're going to be in Australia because we want to watch it at midnight. And
what when does it open?
December 18th.
And we want to use your pool.
Yeah. Well, either way. If you could just cheap in a little for the gas for heating it, I mean, it's killing me.
Yeah, I mean, we'll
the Australian dollar's not as strong as it was when I moved over here. And now I live in a much more expensive apartment and I have not moved.
we'll sell some Thrilling Adventure Hour DVDs on the road.
We'll sell them on the plane.
Yeah. We'll move some units. But yeah, we want to fly in and do that on December 18th. And then after the midnight screening, do a mashup podcast with Steele and us.
Oh, that'll be great.
That's a spoiler app.
I mean, it's a great idea.
If you're around.
This is the thing. No one cares what my opinions on any of these things are because I see everything.
Yeah.
Like, I'll go and see it. I saw all the Star Wars films. Like I said, I've like 1.5 of them. Yeah. And I saw them all probably in the first week at the movies when they were released, you know? Particularly all the recent ones. Oh, yeah, well, I better keep going. I'm in now.
All right, well, let's move on.
We have DVDs, Woman in Gold.
Yeah, I like
This was the one with Ryan Reynolds,
right? Ryan Reynolds and Helen Mirren. If you missed it, it's a good little film to check out. You know, it's not like a big Oscar-worthy, you know, tour de force, but it's a good film. They have good performances.
It's okay. I think you covered that with It Stars Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah. He's surprisingly good in it. Like, that's the reason to see it.
Yeah.
He doesn't ruin it.
Yeah, no. With Ryan Reynolds, if you ever hear the word good, it will have the word surprisingly in front of it.
Well, you can expect Ryan Reynolds and Helen Mirren to be
in the
same sentence either.
You wouldn't.
Next movie is Maggie, and this is another Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
That indie film, right, where his daughter's got the
his daughter's
a zombie.
Got zombie disease, and he tries to save her. Now, there's a review by Neil on the site. He really liked it, so you can check that out. And it's a movie that I missed, that I do. I definitely want to check out.
Yeah, I want to see it too. I heard a great interview with him on radio about why he did this film, and he's like, "It's time to give back. I've made all this money, and I want to start doing cool stuff like this."
Right, and that's great.
So,
and the next movie is 71. Now, this one took a long time to come out on DVD, but this is the one about the. So, we had a guest talk about this movie. It was about a soldier, I think, in Belfast trying to get through. A city hostile to him.
Oh yeah.
I think it's Northern Ireland, I believe.
Yeah, I believe so. It's a young and disoriented British soldier is accidentally abandoned by his unit following a riot in the deadly streets of Belfast in 1971. Yeah, yeah, okay. I remember. Mm-hmm. This did look really interesting. It had a very limited release, so this is a good chance to
catch up
it.
On it.
Yeah, yeah, I want to see Maggie in 71.
Yep. And also, now on the site, we want to talk about, there's a couple new things in the store. Obviously, we have Thrilling Adventure Hour, and we appreciate you guys have been buying that nonstop. But we have Jackie Cation's new comedy special.
Oh.
This Will Make an Excellent Horcrux is now available for digital download from the site. It's $10, and you can just download it from us. Also, we have, that wasn't a joke, we actually have Dana Gould's new LPs, you know, for the collectors. We even got special boxes to ship them, so they will get to you intact.
I love this trend of vinyl coming back.
Yep.
And all these comics are I'm like, the next album I do, I'm going to do a vinyl.
And they're cool because they're all signed too. So if you're a Dana Gould fan and like a collector, you get a nice signed.
It's a really cool collector.
Well, the other thing is,
and he signed it right on the record, so it won't play. So
no, he didn't. good salesmanship.
What you tend to find, though, is that like there are some people that don't want just to have like something in their iPod or whatever. Like you want like
a physical copy, absolutely.
And like that's why I think those like albums have come back, because it's like it's a cool way to have a physical copy.
And you know, I'll tell and it's you, like a conversation piece. Right. It's like a cool thing to hang up.
And I will say too, there's something about having a big LP cover with a signature on it that looks really cool.
Yeah,
because it's bigger. Well, it showcases.
It is a piece of art,
right?
It is like, I mean, album art was a thing.
Yeah,
it was a very distinct thing, and it was one of the reasons, because it was how you bought the album back then. Well, a lot of times you'd go into the record store and go, "That's cool art."
Right.
And that was some of the reasons why you'd buy it.
How do you think Dio sold so many albums?
I was in Portland just last week, and I bought a Wild and Crazy Guy, the Steve Martin album, like, you know, on vinyl. And it was just like $5 in this shop in Portland. But it's just I'm glad that I have that. I've heard that album a million times. I probably won't even put it on. But I kind of like that.
Oh, no, I have a stack of old comedy albums that are just like, I love just knowing I have them. I don't even have a record player. But I like having it. I want to do a little fan feedback.
Yes.
Film nerd intern Daniel Stevens, who's also going to be helping doing a lot of social media for LA Podfest, posted its article in the LA Times about exclusive test footage of Nick Cage suiting up for Tim Burton's Never Made Superman Lives. Wow. That was fascinating. And your guys' comments, we got a great comment from Eric Lang. The death of Superman Lives, what happened? Documentary comes out soon for VOD and Blu-ray release. You should try to get director John Schnepp.
Yes, John Schnepp. Show. Yeah,
that's a great
John.
Idea, Eric. Like,
yeah, no, I know John. I'll email.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm sure he would have a lot to say, too. I'll tell you, this footage, because I saw a trailer for it, actually at the Egyptian. Mm-hmm. And for John's movie, and the footage, the test footage of Nicolas Cage in this suit and as this Superman, it looks like, well, here's someone who's never seen or heard of Superman before is making the movie. It's absolutely fascinating how, like, what would this have even looked like? Like some kind of weird, like, Ralph Bakshi animated crazy, you know, version of Superman. It's, like, insane.
It's like the guy who did The Room made a Superman
movie.
Right,
exactly. But had never heard of Superman before. Yeah.
I'm excited. Well, let's try to get John on the show. Thank you, Eric. That's a really cool suggestion. Coming out this week...
We have Minions. Now, this is a movie I will definitely be going to see. My kids are extremely excited about this film. Now, I haven't been a big fan of the Despicable Me movies. They are simply not that great, especially when Pixar is putting out stuff like Inside Out. It makes them look even worse.
Right.
But Minions is that kind of thing where it's like that side character. It's like the...
The Minions of the Frasier.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. It's... It's and it's like the penguins from Madagascar. Mm. Like they're far more interesting than anything else is going on in 90% of this film. So the kids are really excited, and I mean I don't know how it's going to be. I will definitely be seeing it, but I'm not like holding any hope that it's going to be at all interesting.
Speaking of like somebody watching making Superman without knowing anything about Superman, the other day at Universal Studios, I went on the Minions ride without knowing anything about Minions. I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah.
I feel like you have to be at least bought into the Minions universe or probably under the age of 12 to fully appreciate the Minions ride.
For the record, kids love the ride as well, and they're under 12.
Yeah.
And did you see the new Fast and Furious ride on the tram?
Yes.
Oh,
That's why we went, was for the Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
That's why we went, for the Fast and Furious. We're like, oh, they got the new Fast and Furious thing on the...
Yeah, it's on the tram.
Yeah.
It's part of the tram ride.
Yeah. It's weird, though, that, like... I mean, it's too much. Like, it's too much. Like, it's one of those things where you're like, even by the standards of... But the... It's somehow they've made them worse actors. Like, don't you think? Like, somehow animating them... And getting them to record something, it's worse than it is in the films. But.
Well, clearly it's like, well, it's a ride, right? I think I'm going to, you know, normally I phone in a performance for the film.
Right.
This is a ride. What am I going to do? Yeah.
But my favorite bit is not the acting by the, all the characters from Fast and Furious, but what you get to experience when you go on the tram ride, which is there's a setup to it.
Oh, hilarious. Yeah.
So suddenly as you're going up to, because the King Kong one's great, but you basically just go in there and then suddenly you're in the King Kong world and you're like that the experience is happening, right?
Yeah, there is a setup and there's like different areas. There's like the first the pre-story, and then there's like the story, then you actually go to the actual ride.
So like at one stage, spoilers for the tram ride. But at one stage you go past like a car, like, you know, Fast and Furious style car that's like, and your tram driver's like, hang on, there's a car supposed to be on the and then they start doing like a walkie-talkie, like, you know, through to like, and then like people buzz into your tram to say that you're some like that bit's great.
I that's my favorite thing. They always start out as like, well, everything's going fine. Right. Yes. And whoa, wait, well, what just the hell?
And I will say the technology in this ride is unbelievable. Right? Like when you're in a you're in a tram. You're in a tram and literally you're speeding down the freeway with people shooting at you.
Right.
And it makes
That's why most people in LA are going. Just for the idea that they could speed down one of those freeways. Like, it's not nighttime. It's the middle of the day. And the freeway is just empty, and you're going to speed down.
What a fantasy.
Yeah. It's like the 405 in the middle of the night or right before the president gets there. They do something like they have fans inside the ride. So you get that rush of air, like you're going really fast. Yeah. And, you know, it moves. So you hang on, like you're actually moving. Like your brain actually gets fooled into thinking you're on a high-speed pursuit. It's really cool. So it's like, because the Transformers does a lot of that too in that ride.
But that's, I mean, really are those, the Transformers ride, better than any of the Transformers movies?
By 100 times.
1,000%.
Yeah.
Like, the Transformers is a good ride. Like,
that's all Michael Bay should do is make those rides.
Just make the ride longer. Make it like an extra bit that you can just go and line up for the next bit of it.
Right. Make the rides longer and the movie shorter.
Right.
All right. Speaking of great movies coming out, Ryan Reynolds has a great one. Oh, Selfless. This is a body swap.
Less. Yes.
Oh, it's a good body swap movie.
Yeah.
It looks like it's every one of these cliche stories played out. It doesn't look good to me.
No. And
Go get Woman in Gold.
Yeah.
Like if you're really on a Ryan Reynolds kick and you need a little taste, go get that.
And then you'll be full.
Or find Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place.
Yeah, he was good at that.
Yeah. I tested for that show.
Is that right?
Yeah, I was one of the last.
That girl was really cute, too.
She was great.
There's a movie. What was the name of that movie where he's in the coffin the whole time?
Coffin Town.
Coffin Town.
Buried? Buried?
Buried.
No.
Yeah.
Buried. Grave?
Yeah, Ryan Reynolds buried?
Grave, dig deep.
So anyway, the last movie is Boulevard. This is actually a Robin Williams film. So it's about him as a family guy who actually, you know, develops like a secret life. I saw the trailer. It looks okay, but that always happens when a star passes away. All of these movies slowly come out like the next, you know, year or so afterwards. So, and every one of them, this says this is the last movie he made. But wait, this one just said it's right, the last movie. You know, they always use that as a marketing hook, unfortunately. But I don't know if this one's any good. I saw the trailer. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, it is good to see Robin Williams, obviously, on screen one last time. So, okay.
That's it, guys. Put 276 in the books. Will Anderson, where can people find you on the World Wide Web and the like? And
yeah, Will with one L underscore Anderson on Twitter. I have a podcast, TOFOP, T-O-F-O-P. It will be at the LA Podcast Festival.
Yes, it yes. will.
Which we're looking forward to very much. Charlie, my co-host, my occasional co-host in the old universe.
Is he flying out again?
He's flying out again. Oh, that's great. So, yeah, no, that'll be. It was really huge last year. We had such a great time. So we're looking forward to doing that again. Does this come out?
Today?
Yeah, cool. Yeah. So this week I got some gigs around LA if people are around LA. I'm doing Meltdown on Wednesday and I've got set list on Friday night at the Improv, which will be really cool fun. But Saturday night at 7 o'clock at the Nerd Melt Theatre, I'm doing my touring show that I do around the world, Free Will, which nice. Is the only time I'm doing the whole hour here in LA. Gareth Reynolds is doing support for that. And then I'm in.
Are there any tickets left for that?
Look, it's one of the. There's not, but there will be. You know, it's what they always say. There's like 20 on the night, so if right. people want, but it's kind of booked out. But there will be. I mean, basically, if you come down, we'll find a way to squeeze you in. Do you know what I mean? And so that should be really cool. Next week, I'm at Comedy on State in Wisconsin.
Oh, that's a great club.
I hear nothing but great things.
You're
about
gonna love
it.
That club, and hopefully, the Hanson brothers will show up and say hello.
Oh, mm-hmm. That'd be good. And then Toronto for a couple of nights, and then Montreal for Just for Laughs.
So, oh, sweet.
Yeah, you can. But you know, find all those dates in those places. You know, in the appropriate places.
In the appropriate places.
My DVD Illuminati is available for purchase some places, and if you can't purchase it where you are, steal it.
Is it on iTunes?
It's only not here.
Not US
steal
iTunes.
It.
Jeez.
You know what you can do if you want to like legitimately buy it and you're in the US. Mm. If you've got a friend in Australia, get them to send you an iTunes card. If you've got an Australian iTunes card, you can just go in and buy it off the Australian iTunes and download it and watch it on that. You don't have to set up an account. You just need a gift card.
Let us know when it does come to iTunes here in the States, because we have a CFN iTunes store.
Oh, yeah, I was hearing that. That's fantastic.
Yeah, and we can put it in there, absolutely.
Yeah, cool. Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
Awesome. Well, guys, that's our show. I will be headlining the Improv at Harrah's Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada next week, July 14th through the 19th. A couple other things going on. What else we got going on? And then I'm in Lake Tahoe in August. Tahoe is August 19th through the 23rd. And also headlining the Hollywood Improv August 29th. So come check that out. And of course, Los Angeles Podcast Festival, September 18th through the 20th.
Absolutely. And the week after, I'll actually be in Tahoe.
Yeah.
I'll be there.
You're going to Tahoe. And mm-hmm. we've just added Jen Kirkman is now doing PodFest.
Yes.
Lauren Lapkus is doing it. Mm-hmm. We've got about 20-some shows confirmed. The Sklar Brothers, Todd Glass, Janet Varney. Stuff You Should Know.
Yep. Obviously, Mark Maron, Aisha Tyler.
Thrilling Adventure Hour.
First time Thrilling Adventure Hour doing the festival.
First time. Mm-hmm. Doug Benson's doing Doug Loves Movies and Dining with Doug and Karen. Mm-hmm. Todd Glass. We've just been working on some other stuff with the festival that we're going to be announcing soon, but we're also updating the website.
For sure. But we want to mention, too, we've got some gaming podcasts we haven't before. This is new. We're adding Giant Bombcast is confirmed, and mm-hmm. also Indoor Kids.
Yeah, this is cool. First time ever having Indoor Kids, I believe, right? Or we have one?
I think we had them one time before, but first time for Giant Bombcast.
Yeah. So a lot of first-time shows, and of course, Kevin Avery and W. Commonwell, Denzel Washington is the greatest actor of all time, period. They're going to be there. So we're going to have at least, you know, some classic favorites and a lot of new shows. It's going to be awesome. We're going to do a little preview night on the 17th.
At the Improv.
At the Improv. Sideshow Network is helping us with that. So here's how that's going to work, guys. We'll announce more details as it gets closer. But if you buy a weekend pass... you can go to these preview night on Thursday the 17th at the Hollywood Improv using your weekend pass. You can go get your weekend pass that
early.
Thursday early
yeah.
at the Improv. So it's a little bonus if you fly in from out of town or you live
in LA. There's going to be about 4 to 8 shows at the Improv too, because we got the whole place. We've got the lab upstairs and we've got the main showroom.
Yeah, we've got the whole place. So it's a little cool thing if you're in town a night early or you live in LA. And you want to buy a weekend pass, it's just an extra night of shows you're going to get.
Right.
So it's going to be really...
How can you go wrong?
I also want to give a big shout out, to the podcast community. One of our fans who listens to the show a lot, Ashley Raper, was going through a tough time, and many of you rallied
and showed support for
showed support for her on Twitter. Many of you emailed me directly, like Vanessa. A couple others said, "Hey, Graham, have you talked to Ashley? Is she okay? She's doing a lot better." And that's just,
I know Neil was checking in on her.
Yeah, Neil was checking in on her, and just the fact that you guys did that is just why this medium is so awesome. And you know, like every day, you know, we're watching footage for Earbuds.
Yep.
And hearing all about that it's such a cool thing that we've helped create this community. And you're helping someone. Like, you really help somebody in huge ways. So, Ashley, a big shout out to you. I know you're traveling back to Michigan, so we'll talk to you soon. So that's our show, ladies and gentlemen. There will be a Terminator spoiler app coming out later this week. And go to all the websites and like all the stuff and following all the stuff.
Oh, we should mention we'll be at Comic-Con this week, too.
Oh, shit, yeah. We'll be doing Rick Meyers' Kung Fu Extravaganza.
Thursday night. And Neil will be joining us. This is his first Comic-Con panel.
Oh.
So all three of us will be there. So check it out. If you're going to San Diego, going to Comic-Con, we'll be there Thursday night.
Yeah, we'll be walking the floor Thursday day.
And I'm going to go to preview night, too, on Wednesday night.
Yeah.
So because you have the show with Doug.
Yeah, I'll be doing a show there and on Wednesday night with Doug. And then... yeah, it'll be fun, man. See you.
It'll
come down.
Great.
Come on,
see you down
at Comic-Con. All right, guys, that's our show. Thank you, Will Anderson.
Thank you. Sorry, I was just sitting back. I was like, no one needs me to make these plugs go longer. I'll just I'll sit back, or I'll start plugging other stuff.
Yeah, I know. You'll just jump in. All right, guys. Well, that's our show. My name is Graham Elwood,
and I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember.
Han shot first.